wait a minute, wait a turn, minute. On radio. Turn on the radio. My homie got a new show and it's time to play it, though. I hope you got in tune.
Welcome to the Startup Showcase. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me, Review Tracker CEO Chris Campbell. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott. Excited to be here.
You are the first. We've had guest hosts before. It's usually friends of the program. Not that you're not a friend of the program, but you've been on the pod and stuff, so I feel like we're close enough there. But usually, you know, I'll have people I know really well on, and it's just sort of like, or they're in town, and it's like, what are you doing this weekend? Like, do you want to come co-host a show? But usually it's not specifically lined up for the purposes of being like, we are going to hear pitches. I'm sure, you know, you're a successful guy and you run a very successful company. I'm sure you hear people pitching to you nonstop, or at least your inbox is full.
Just once or twice.
Yeah. Just a few. Yeah. So, and this is common. And the funny thing is, I talk to companies, it's not just entrepreneur, you know, like the techie companies. There's companies, CEOs all over the place, and they get every, because they're the only guy who's like, if you're a CEO of a company and you live down the street from somebody whose kid wants to do something, everybody immediately is like, oh, well, you know, Steve's a CEO, so like, send it to him. Every CEO gets this. So I felt like I was pigeonholed because I am a big partner and fan of Republic, that I couldn't be more vocal to the companies. Like, I can give them advice, but like, I can't be specific. And I was like, you know what? You know what this show needs? Not to say that you have to be the black hat guy, but the show needs like a little bit of the other side.
No pressure whatsoever.
Well, there's none, because you leave after the show and you don't have to ever come back. I have to come back next week. So anyway, I thought this is a perfect way to kick it off. And also, I mean, the type of company that you're in, I think, also lends itself to something like this. So for that, why don't we start off by just having you tell the audience exactly what Review Trackers is and what you do, so that they know who you are.
Hey, my name, again, is Chris Campbell. I'm the CEO of a company called Review Trackers. We're a software company based out of Chicago. We got about 60 people on our team. And what we do is we help businesses like restaurants, car dealers, healthcare systems track and manage what customers are saying online. So, Scott, when you leave a review of your favorite restaurant, we alert that restaurant, and then we analyze that, collect it all, so that the restaurant better understands what you love about your experience, what they can improve. At the end of the day, we're trying to help local businesses succeed. And today, about 65,000 businesses take advantage of our software, primarily in the U.S., but we do offer it in about 25 countries.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I honestly, that it's funny. I actually, of course, know what you do, but I always wondered if the whether it's companies or it's restaurants or whatever, if they actually read it. Like, I hope so. I mean, obviously, you know that they do. This is one of those things where I look at the like people I know, and I'm not going to name names, who run businesses where their glass door is just garbage, just hot garbage. And I ask them, like, do you know you're a 2.6? Do you know, like, and you're very commonly mentioned? Like, and it's a 2.6 or 7, not including all the ones, because you've counted them with fake fives. Like, you're legit like a 1.8.
It's hard.
And they don't know sometimes. I'm like, do you just get to a certain level where you're just like, all right, or like a 3 point, I'm out. Like, you just stop reading it.
You know, I guess it depends on the company. So I think every company goes through iterations of, you know, good culture, bad culture, highs, lows, and everything in between. And it's about how you adapt and evolve. And some businesses, the reality is they're going to go, this is just the way we've done business. We're not going to change. But when you think about how tight the labor markets are, you know, the reality is like, in my world, I think of we're at like zero unemployment, because we're not hiring people that are unemployed. We're hiring people from stealing them from other companies. And so when it's that competitive,
I'm also like, guilty of that. I'm the world's finest poacher.
But where else are you going to get great talent? And, you know, that's what they look at. I remember through our history, we've been around coming up on 7-8 years now, at different punctures. You know, like if we had like 3, you know, questionable reviews, people would bring it up in the job interview. Like, I see there's 25 good ones, but these 3 ones that just came up, like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And then we would talk about, hey, this is what we did to address it and fix it. And then, like, you grow out of it. And now, like, that's no longer like focus on our profile, because like the majority of them are
completely
positive.
If I'm not mistaken, Review Trackers pitched on Technori's stage, I think, didn't they?
We did many years ago.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Like circa 2012.
Yeah, this is like right around when, so like the first ever pitch, I believe, or event was Spot Hero. It was Jeremy from Spot Hero.
Wow.
And then you guys weren't, yeah, right? That's a throwback. That's a throwback in a bunch of ways. But yeah, I mean, you were like right after that. I mean, it could have been too much later.
Yeah,
that.
I was fortunate. I knew Seth and a couple of the original conspirators, if you will,
yeah, that's
that kind of put it all together. And you know, really quickly, this was one of those things that was selling out and filling the...
Well, there just wasn't a place to do this, which is why when we kind of started, you know, we exited the event space as a regular, kind of on a regular, by doing this show, because the reality is, thankfully, this city's gotten big enough that we needed more companies. But also, the investors here, I mean, people in Chicago maybe don't want to hear this or whatever, but this is the truth. You can only spin around in a circle so many times. You need to expand the web. And I felt like we were not, like, and I don't mean we, Technori, but like we, the city, we weren't, the investors were not looking and getting sniffs at companies outside of here.
Yeah.
So I just started bringing them in this way. I was like, well, if you're not going to invest, I'm just going to bring them in anyway.
The market's definitely changed. You know, when I think about what the angel or VC community was 10 years ago, 5 years ago to now, dramatically different at all those intervals.
Oh, totally. All right, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back, and I believe there is a story of your first job, which I am excited to. It might compare to one of the founders pitching today. So we are at WGN Radio listening right now, and we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We were just kind of spinning off of, and this is a question I like to ask some of the founders who pitch, too, because it's like, I really think you can tell a ton about founders and CEOs and leaders in general based on the first job they had. What was the first job, notable job that you had?
So I think the best way to tell the story is the first company, I'll say like air quotes, ever started. You know, I was probably about 10 years old.
Okay.
You know, out front. I grew up in the Chicago suburbs and, you know, tree-lined street, everything that you kind of think of a majestic childhood, if you will. And hot summer day, just like it is in Chicago where it's 90-plus degrees. And, you know, I have my little lemonade stand at the end of the driveway. And
is this just you solo, or there are Chris friends, or is this just me Chris
solo?
Roller?
This is you know,
solopreneur,
hustle driven ever since I was a young kid. And the mailman comes by, Butch, you know, was his name, because in the suburbs,
how perfect,
you know, the mailman's name,
and it's Butch,
and he's, you know, he's walking up, it's really hot, and he like kind of takes his arm, wipes the sweat from his brow, and I'm like, hey, Butch, would you like a glass of lemonade? And he kind of does one of those things where he's like, you know, pretending like seeing if he's got any cash in his pockets, like moving his hands around. He's like, oh, I can't do it. And I feel like I'm about to lose a sale. So he starts walking away. And I go, hey, how about a glass of water? That's free. And he goes, you know what? That sounds great. I scamper off into the house to get him a glass of water. I come back out. My mom is now talking to him. You know, some people.
I was going
to
say, you come back out and all the lemonade's gone.
You know, I always joke, but some people drink, some smoke. My mom plants flowers. So she was like in the front yard, like planting flowers. And Butch, how's the kids? What's going on with the family? And I give him this up of water. He goes, thank you so much. Takes a sip, spits it right out. My mom goes, what's wrong?
Vodka.
He goes, that water is boiling hot.
Oh.
And without skipping a beat, I go, now would you like a glass of lemonade? So at 10 years old, that was my
supply and
first
demand,
and last
my friend.
Lemonade stand. But yeah, I was creating supply and demand curves before I even knew what that was. That was the original hustle, if you will.
I would have sworn that for some reason there was vodka in like a trough in your house, and you just like dad was, I don't know what was going on there. No, it's funny. Like, I've had, you know, a couple people on the show that are obviously very successful. We I've talked about this a bunch of times recently. The CEO of Guaranteed Rate, Victor. Yeah. His first job, I asked him what his first job, I would have sworn it was cutlery. It wasn't, which is not surprising that a, you know, person who's in the loans business would be selling knives. He used to go spray paint people's addresses on the curb and then try to sell the service back to them. He wouldn't ask. He'd just spray paint the curb and then be like, Mrs. Stevens, you owe me. Like, that's creating supply and demand, literally. Because then he's going to charge you to get rid of the paint.
That's definitely a business model.
I was trying to think, like, what was the first thing that I did? And I mean, this is, I don't know. I'm going to say this, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, like, as far as, like, telling about me as a person who runs companies. My first job, my obviously, like anybody else, you're going to mow the lawn. Okay, right. So we're going to give you chores, and you're going to do, we're going to pay you $10 an hour, whatever it was.
Yep,
offer me 10, 15 bucks, whatever it was to do the lawn or take out the garbage. I really, really quickly realized that was not something that I was down for. I needed the money, but I wasn't down to do any of the, like, the actual labor. And so I recruited all my friends, and I would literally be like, I'll pay you $6 if you want to mow the back of my
classic
lawn.
Classic arbitrage.
Oh, yeah. And my mom would come home, and I'd be just playing, like, Nintendo in the basement, and my friend John Lewis would be just walking around the yard with a lawnmower. And I even got these idiots to bring their own gas. Like, my family didn't even pay for the gas. My mom was like, why is John Lewis mowing our lawn? And I was like, because he said yes. Where's my $6? Like, I'm making profit on it. I was profitable from day one.
That's the right way to do it.
I don't know. I feel like I tell this story and sometimes people look at me like, that's super lazy. And I'm like, I mean,
I definitely did that as a child as well.
Yeah, like, I don't feel like that's lazy. I think that's just like, you know, it's like George Carlin. It's just hard work is for people short on talent. I was talented. What do you want me to do? Okay, so we're going to set up the conversation for the next, you know, half of the show. We're going to start doing the startup pitches. They're going to call in, and you and I are going to sort of go back and forth. Feel free to ask questions of them. But before we do that, I want to ask you, what is some of the craziest either experience you had pitching, or, you know, you still pitch your company, you still sell the product to people. What's the craziest sort of pitch you've had to be present for?
Pitch that I've had to give, or
whether you gave, it could be like I've talked to people who the craziest pitch is the one they gave. I'm assuming you're not Fyre Festival, so
no. Although after watching that Netflix documentary, I was like, this seems really easy,
right?
I was like, if you can do the logistics, which I feel pretty good about,
yeah,
we just need to hire some Instagram influencers, and you have a festival. But I think that was the wrong takeaway from that.
Yeah.
I looked at it like,
wow, I could duplicate this scam. It's probably not the way you want to go about it. But yeah, so like, what would be an example of like one of the, and it doesn't have to be like a wild outlandish story, but just like something that
I got
you,
a good one.
Yeah. All right. Let's go.
So, you know, when you're starting, you know, like the company, like Review Tracker's first venture company, you're basically at the investor's whims to a certain extent. I mean, I must've pitched probably about 200 investors before we got like our first real investment. And, one of them sits vividly in my mind, and he's a Chicago investor. And he's just a funny guy. And, you know, it was like one of those things where I followed up with him a couple of times. And like, he's like, I'll meet you Sunday at 1 o'clock at Buckingham Fountain. And I'm like, okay. Like, he's like, this is the only time slot I have. So I show up and it's at a wine festival. So
how old are you?
I was, so this is 7-8 years ago, late 20s.
Okay.
It's like, I'm old enough. That wasn't the problem.
I don't mean like to drink. I just mean like it's one of those things. Like if I'm a young founder and I'm also talking to investors and people, like I probably don't bring a 23-year-old founder. Like, you should meet me at Ravinia. Like, that's just already yeah. Not good.
But it was you know, one of those deals where it was like, you know, open bar tasting, had a great time. Got a chance to pitch and tell the story, and he chose not to invest. But years later, he's like, you're the one that got away. I should have done that deal, which
yeah.
Brings a little bit of satisfaction.
So that's a good example.
Yeah.
That's a good example.
Definitely had a few that were like, oh, I'm going to be at this nightclub at 10 o'clock. Just like all sorts of weird. I'm like, if the only time slot you have is like 11:30 at a nightclub, I'm not mean with you. So.
It's so like, it's such a good point. Like, there's a weird sort of spot where we come in as founders trying to raise money or just partner with people, where you are so desperate almost to like get this deal done, and there's so much riding on this one thing, and you've put so much into this that people say things that should be like massive red flags. Not that they're bad people. I mean, sometimes they are, but like that it's just not a good fit. And you just sort of like look past it because you have to. You feel like we just got to do this. And like, if you don't fit with the person, if it doesn't like work out symbiotic in a way, like it's never gonna be good. And I think a lot of founders forget that when they take money, even if you're the founder and CEO and chairman, you work for your investors. Like, the minute you take money, you have an employer. And I think that's kind of a forgotten fact. Like, do you want to work for this? But yeah, they're wealthy. They can help you.
Yeah.
Do you want to work for them? And depending on who you are, that 11 o'clock nightclub might or might not be a good,
yeah.
might not be a good fit.
Yeah. I serve at the pleasure of the board and the investors, you know,
yeah.
and our team.
Which is a great, well, the team thing is all right. Cause a lot of times you got to pick them. The board, you generally get the pick, but like not really. And then like it depends. Like you start getting real money coming in, and then all of a sudden that board is really not as friendly as it once was.
Yeah, they're always helpful when it's things are good, but when things go sideways, that's when it gets a little hairy.
Well, we're gonna find out if things are gonna go sideways after this, because we're gonna have our next call, and we're gonna take a quick break and go to commercial. Correct. All right, we're gonna do that, and we will come back. It's gonna be a heck of a rest of the show. All right, welcome back to the show. Chris Campbell, CEO, Review Trackers. We are sitting here. We're getting ready to have our first call-in pitch. I'll set him up a little bit. Michael Jansen, he is the CEO of City Zenith. Michael, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. All right, well, first off, I want to say thank you for taking the time to come in. I'm excited to have you pitch. The way it's going to operate in this is we're gonna get your elevator pitch. So I'm gonna play some music to cue this up. But first, I just want to let you know I want to hear the pitch of what the business is, why it works, how it makes money, and then we're gonna ask you some questions and see if not our investment, why someone should invest. Does that sound good?
That sounds good. Thanks very much.
All righty, cue the music.
This is Michael Jansen. Nice to meet everyone. Thanks very much for tuning in today. I'm the founder and CEO of a company called City Zenith. City Zenith was co-founded by myself and one of the creators of Google Earth, and we're a technology company based here in Chicago with a new digital twin software platform that I'm going to talk about today, which we launched last year and is now starting to capture the attention of the building industry around the world. So we were recently called one of the most important platform technologies by the Building Design and Construction magazine, and the best way to visualize what we do is it's like SimCity, but for real cities and real projects, and we help building owners and architects use data like never before to predict real-world design and operational outcomes in this digital twin environment. Since we launched about 9 months ago, we've signed major commercial contracts with customers like Foster & Partners, Cushman & Wakefield, JLL, WS Atkins, Prologis, et cetera, a lot of very large-scale projects, and we focus on mega projects. We're doing everything from multi-block developments to corporate campuses to even a massive infrastructure project in the U.K. Digital twins, you might ask, it's a new technology, got very hot the past couple of years. It's now a $1.5 billion industry, growing to $16 billion in just the next 3 years. And digital twinning is just making 3D virtual replicas of buildings, infrastructure, other things. It's connected to all the data in and around them. And once we do that, we can use them to optimize performance and predict and visualize outcomes like predictive maintenance, energy consumption, and space utilization. Generally, they save owners something like 5 to 25% in operating costs annually when they're deployed. Our unique advantage as a company is that we have a solution which is able to scale across the entire life cycle of a building, from design and planning all the way through construction and operations, and gives us access to very large customers as such. We've raised already about $6 million in the seed round very successfully, and we have $1 million left in this round, which is now being going live on Republic. And we've kicked that off recently, and it's going great. So it's really a pleasure to talk to everyone. This is really kind of last money in on what's been a very exciting ride, and we're getting very near a growth round. In fact, I think by the end of the year, we'll be inviting major institutions to fund our company. So this is a very interesting time for us.
Very cool.
That's it, Chris.
Thank you so much. So here's the deal. Chris, do you have any questions from that pitch right off the bat?
That was a pretty good pitch.
Right?
Yeah. That was, I read through your bio, Michael, that you've done this before. So definitely shows through the...
I was going to say, I'm looking at the Republic term sheet. I'm like watching bullet point by bullet point by bullet. I actually read along as he hits up JLL. So this is great. I want to know, like, what got you into this line of business, because we've had a couple people in this space, which I would call you phrased it perfectly, the SimCity space, where it requires a certain amount of creativity and imagination and like city planning, zoning. It's very complex, and there's like very slow moving real estate players involved. You have to have incredible vision, but also incredible patience. What is your background that sort of got you into this, you know, the second time around again?
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm an architect by training. You know, I was an undergrad at Yale and then a graduate student at Cambridge in architecture. And I was set on the course to be a traditional architect, if you will. I got introduced to large-scale projects because my career started in Asia as a young architect in my 20s. You know, that was at the time when Southeast Asia was booming, and China and India and all of that. And so I was tossed out into that region and to put onto these very large projects. And so I got exposed to how complicated it was to do these things and a lot of the tools at the time that were used to build these projects. And it was hard. You know, it would take 20, 30, 40 different sets of tools to just execute one project. And fast forward, I got to a point in my career, by the time I was 30, I was asked to join a firm as a partner, and I chose not to. I chose to branch off and start my own, what was kind of effectively a CAD and BIM services company. We made computer-aided design and 3D building information modeling. This is basically 3D CAD type of work for large architecture firms all over the world. We ended up working for, as you know from my background, 30 of the top 50 firms in the world, and Sequoia Capital, you know, who famously invested in Google and Yahoo, all these folks. They invested $13 million in that company, but took it to 500 people and did 5,000 projects. And what I learned was, in building that company, not just how to build a company fast, but I also learned what the problems of the industry were. We were using like 30 tools as a company just to deliver to our various clients, and our clients were complaining that there was just too many tools, too many services, too many data formats, and they really wanted one platform for everything that could unify it all and then allow you to achieve efficiencies across the entire life cycle. So that was the genesis. And because I had the Sequoia background, when I spun out of my last company, I asked Sequoia to give me their best recruiter. I said, give me a technologist who can understand this vision. And we ended up hiring the CTO, the guy who created Google Earth, of all people. And so he came to us.
Quite a
hire. But here's the thing, though. I'll tell you, you asked about the complexity of it. Yes, because the complexity of this tool is that it marries three different major technologies. One is what I call the 3D CAD or the BIM, building information modeling world. That's all the 3D data stuff that architects, they don't make things in paper anymore. They design three-dimensionally, and all those things are full of data. That's one world. Then you have the world of GIS, which is all like the urban context data, all the zoning and all that kind of data, all that comes like on a map. That's another world. And then gaming. Gaming is the world that allows you to take all this and stream it nicely and make it easy to use. And that's the world that the gentleman from Google Earth came from. So we've always had this kind of mix of people that come in and help unify these different technologies together to get the platform that we have.
Chris?
Yeah, Michael, just kind of curious. I saw some of this on the Republic page as well, but could you kind of walk us through your revenue model? Is it like one-time fees, subscription? You know, how do you hope it's going to work?
We are an enterprise-based SaaS subscription model that's augmented with professional services in order to deliver our solution. So if we give a customer a digital twin solution, they get the platform with their buildings and data loaded into it that they then use as a SaaS subscription over the life cycle of that asset. So all of our contracts have recurring revenue, about 2/3 to 3/4 that recurs every year. And we also have additional professional services that we charge up front, like modeling and data loading, in order to actually create the twin itself. That comprises the majority of our revenue model.
So saying these buildings are being built for the next 100 years, do you think there'll be a subscriber if they own the building the next 100 years? Is that kind of how you think about it?
I do. The mega projects are all multi-year. So the contracts we're getting aren't just, you know, 3 months and out. They're multi-year. We signed a contract with the what's called the East-West Rail Alliance in the UK to do a high-speed bullet train that goes from Oxford to Cambridge. This is actually something that's visible online. And that project will run 8 years. You know, so these kind of recurring revenue streams, when they're multi-year, they really add to our valuation as a company, of course, because it's guaranteed downstream revenue too.
I want to ask you one last question before they do go, and it's probably too long of an answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. You talk about having the guy who built Google Earth, but you also talk about your own experience working with these gigantic companies and sort of understanding how the sausage is made. And
right.
I think when I talk to founders, young, old, repeat, not, the one thing that gets lost is they get really concentrated in on the technology that's going to enable this business to take place, and they forget about the fact that the experience of strategic partnerships and knowing what partners you need to get and how to close them seems to me to be the most important. Do you think that for you, if you were to launch this again right now, that's really early, so I don't know why you would launch again right now, but point is, do you think the more valuable part of this, and obviously they go together, but do you think the more valuable part of this is going to be your ability to understand the partnership piece of this and how it all comes together, or is it the technology, or do you really think that without either one of them, it's no good?
Well, what's happening is that we're forging partnerships with massive companies. We just signed contracts with Lendlease, you know, who, by the way, just won the Google campus, the $17 billion company. We're working with W.S. Atkins. We're working with all of our partners and clients are huge. I think the success is both. The technology has to continue to be superior, and we have to continue to work with them highly collaboratively. That is what's not in the market today. They're sick and tired of buying things out of the box and then trying to stitch them together to other things out of the box.
Yep.
But they wanted something, a platform which is very extensible and customizable that they can build upon, and that's why we're having success.
I think this is great. Michael, I really appreciate you taking the time to pitch this. best of luck to you. Where do people go to get in on the deal?
Well, they can go to the Republic deal right now. It's republic.co/cityzenith, CityZenith. And you can see more about the company there. We'd have a great start, and we welcome you all, especially people from the Chicago area. Please, thank you.
Of course, yeah. And I will be posting this on Technoria and my pages on Twitter, at Katoon, at Technoria. It'll be posted there. And I believe last time I looked, it was about 105,000 invested with about 100 days left on this. So there's
That's
plenty
right.
of time for people to get involved. And so, yeah, thank you so much for taking the pitch.
You bet. You too. Thanks, everyone.
Of course. Take care. All right, Chris, we're going to take a break in a second, but I got to ask you first thoughts on this. Thumbs up, thumbs down, winner, where are you at?
Thumbs up. Count me in.
I can't agree more. I think when you get a founder who knows exactly what they're doing and they're that like strategic about every single thought, there are times where I literally don't have to listen to the rest of the business pitch. It's like, whatever, you'll figure it out. You're clearly smarter than me. You'll figure it out. I'm in. So, yeah, I'm in with that. We're going to take a quick break. We will maybe talk a little bit about sort of the experience, your first experience listening to this, and sort of all of the things that go into building a good company. We will be back right after this. All right, we are back here. We're like trading. There's a show. This show should have no commercials. So if you're a sponsor of a big company and you like this show, you should call. I don't know what the number is. You can just email me at hello@technori. And we'll work out a sponsor deal where this show does not have any commercials and you can hear all of the stuff that's going on behind the scenes. Because I swear to God, especially as we start getting these co-hosts in here, the back part of the show might actually be better than the front part of the show. I'm just saying. I was in the middle of, you're going to get to hear the rest of a story that you didn't hear the front of. And for that, I'm apologizing. So we were talking about this off the air, about the fact that founders a lot of times get the really nice... let me know when you get some traction kind of thing. And I just think that like, it's what, this is not a good start to this new segment, but, it's what Jordan Belfort, the scam artist, Wolf of Wall Street guy, calls a looky-loo. The worst thing a salesperson can ever encounter is a looky-loo. Someone's like, oh yeah, I love the product. Not going to buy it. Never intended to, but don't tell you no. And so you just keep wasting time with them. And I don't know if it's because they like the attention or what. Looky-loo investors and people who hear a pitch and then let that person scramble away with like totally lost. I think it's a mistake. I got the most out of my pitches to people who were like, that's a stupid bleep idea. And I'm like, all right, I have to consider like either my idea is bad. It's not going to change my course of action. Either my idea is bad, or I have to realize if that's who I'm trying to sell my business to and I can't, that's their response, I have trouble. Do you see what I'm saying with this? Like,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it totally depends on, like, we'll call it the audience. So
yeah.
I think family members, it could be the dumbest idea in the world. Families can be like, oh, I love what,
not
you know,
my family.
What, you know, nephew Charlie's doing,
yeah.
Or, you know, Sarah just built. Oh, really? A toothbrush for dogs that's electric? Oh, that's
that actually isn't a terrible idea. I don't,
maybe,
okay. I mean, I can't.
I was trying to think of, like, something off the wall. Maybe that's not that crazy in today's world when I.
That's a huge market, my friend.
Okay.
All right. Both the tooth care, the vanity, and the pets. Are you kidding? You've got like a $1 trillion market in front of you.
Yeah, but it's only allowed. It only works
in
space or something. Yeah.
But still, we're investing in SpaceX. Bezos is going. You're flushed with good ideas. I'll finish the story with this guy that I'm not going to say the names. I might drop one name just because he's a friend and it's funny and he would think this is funny. We had a founder come in, and he was very nice, and the product is not terrible, but he made a bunch of rookie mistakes. We had a Cubs game we hosted this past day week with a bunch of great founders. My good friend Patrick Tanous, TS2T. If you go to Target, go buy TS2T. That's my
I'm a plug. Fan of it. We drink it at our office.
Boom. So Patrick is an honest fella, and the founder came up and was pitching his business, and Patrick said, hey, bro, you got it at gmail.com on your business card. That's a no-no. And he was like, well, you know, we're not up and running, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, you can't afford $5 a month for a business Gmail? Like, right off the bat, dude, the kid was stunned. And you know what? It affected the way he pitched after that. And that, to me, is something that you're not ready to be a CEO running and handling people's money, because you took one thing, got shaken, and it got a little bit off kilter. And that's a small thing. You should have just, that's not something you can't just be like, thank you for the point, and then continued. He like shook. So then anyway, I sent him to a couple other VCs in town, and I prepped them ahead of time very early, was doing a favor because he was coming into town from out of town, and I wanted to be, you know, a good host of Chicago. And the person I sent it to shook him like my dog shakes its toy. And it was like, what the hell? And I honestly felt like it was the best possible thing for him because he had to learn. And I'll quote and the person who met with him wrote me an email and told him what he said. And I'll share it with you, the audience, and Chris, and I think you'll get a kick out of it. He said to them, you got to know who you're meeting with. You have to know what stage you are and what stage they are. And a waste of my time is not on an early stage deal that I'm not going to invest in. That's not the part that wastes my time. What wastes my time is your game wasn't up high enough. So now you're reaching on a rim you can't dunk on, and it's a waste of time. And there's something to be said. I think it was a really smart comment. There's something to be said about when I know I want to meet with the biggest dogs. I want NEA. I want all these Sequoias. But I'm not ready. I don't have a product or a proposition or a track record that warrants that. So no, I'm not going to take a long shot and then pitch in front of them and get destroyed.
Yeah. I think to a certain extent, some of that, and you know, part of it's mentors, advisors, prepare you, get you ready. But like somebody got to fall on your face a few times and be willing to get back up. And I think that's part of being an entrepreneur is like most people do things that everyone else thinks is crazy and not possible. And you have to fight through that adversity to get to the other side. And a lot of times it should hopefully have those tough conversations to go, you know, this is terrible. This sucks. This needs to be better. You know,
that's why I was telling you.
We all go through those evolutions, you know?
That's what I was saying before this about the point of like bad, the not looky loo, the bad advice. Like, I'll just be honest.
Real feedback.
I would like to have those fall on my face moments at the tiers that are just slightly above me. Not at the top, like the ultimate. Like, I don't want the person who I'm going to try to raise 10 from to throw me against the wall when I'm trying to raise 10,000. And like, because right. you and that tells you, like, hey, man, kudos for reaching out, but like, know who you are.
Yeah, that's something I talk about internally in my team. I'm like, because sometimes you're like, people, you know, new hires, like, what does your job look like? And the reality is, like, every 6 to 9 months, it changes because I constantly have to level up. I'm focused and working on different priorities, getting more strategic, less tactical, if you will. And that same thing happens. Like if you're pitching an angel investor conversation versus a true institutional investor, completely different expectations of how you pitch, your story, materials, revenue, whatever.
Angels are taking long shots and they're fine with it. Well, they're not, but they're supposed to be. Institutional rounds, like we were talking about this, we won't get into the people who here, but you raise a certain amount of money and there is a only above this, you know, level does this qualify as a success. You set yourself up for a massive failure, more than likely. You better know that.
I was at dinner this week with some investors, and they told the story of how they were the early money to a company that's just call it $10 million. Then they raised a monster round from Valley, and it was one of the, you know, tier one funds, and they came in and said, we're not fucking. Every day at like 5 o'clock, we're having a phone call, like for an hour, you tell me about the progress of the day and we got to grow the company faster, et cetera. And, at the end of it, like, the CEO was canned, because he couldn't keep up with how fast they were telling me he's got to step on the gas. It still grew it from like a $10 million to a $75 million business, like in what was like 2 or 3 years, but they're like, this is shy of 500 where it needs to be.
Yeah. No, I think it's, you know, honestly, I really think that people don't quite understand what they're getting into. And we were talking about, we'll plug them right now because we talked about it before, Generator. I really like what the guys at Generator do because they set the table for what is arbitrage the right word? Like what the game is.
Yeah.
There's like five games going on.
Joe and Troy do an excellent job of helping businesses. Like, I mean, they helped us. We went through the program. In 90 days, we tripled in revenue. There's not many places that I think you can do that and execute on.
Totally agree. All right, we have to take one more commercial, then we're going to go to news, and then we're going to come back with another pitch for everybody. I'll be right after this. Welcome back to the Startup Showcase. I'm your host, Scott Cajun. Joining me for today's show, Chris Campbell. He is the CEO of Review Trackers. I'm just going to apologize in case people heard it. There was an F-bomb slipped, Chris, on accident, and I just want to apologize in case anyone was offended by that. It was not intended.
Sorry, folks.
Sorry,
Got passionate about sharing the story.
We're passionate entrepreneurs. So I just want to make sure that we're good there. Okay, we're going to kick it over here. Do we have our next call-in is on the line, right? Okay, so Danny is on the line. He's the CEO of Salsa God. So, like, that's awesome. Danny, I want to first thank you for coming and calling into the show. And I want to apologize because I'm going to nerd out on food. and I might confuse people as to what your business is because I just love salsa that much. So I'm just going to preface this by saying I apologize ahead of time if I get lost and hooked on your salsa.
That's totally fine. We love people that love salsa.
That's why they call you the Chief Amigo. Okay, so here's the deal. I'm going to play my little elevator pitch beat here, and after that, at the bell, you are going to start pitching the company. I want to know why you exist. I want to know what you do, and I want to know how you make money. Sound good?
Sounds good. Salsa God is a better-for-you snack brand food company specializing in restaurant-style salsas, tortilla chips, and soon to be releasing a line of fresh salsas, and further going to diversify into additional Mexican food products. Salsa God was started in 2016, and we launched into 55 Whole Foods stores, and now we currently have approximately 2,250 stores. We're in two countries, so we're distributing both U.S. and Australia. Soon to be releasing our product into Canada, so we're going to be exporting to three countries. And we are very, very excited about our newest product, which is a chips and salsa combo pack. I couldn't believe it, but no one had done this before, at least not very successfully. So we now have a product. It's a grab-and-go item, 4-ounce cup of salsa and a 3-ounce bag of tortilla chips all in one. So that's going to be hitting convenience stores soon, pretty soon going to be in airports, going to be all over the country. So we're really excited about that.
I had to woohoo you. I couldn't help it. I'm so excited.
Thank you. Yeah, we are super excited about it. So, you know, about a year ago, it took pretty much a year from conception to releasing the product. I was at the store and I'm thinking, you know, let's get some chips and salsa just to kind of snack on. Well, there isn't anybody that makes a good chips and salsa, at least not big enough to actually be a full snack. So after doing a little investigation, I thought, if no one's done it before, then someone has to do it, and that someone has to be Salsa God. So we just released our product, and it's soon going to be in at least 700 to 1,000 stores in the next couple months, so we're really excited about that.
Awesome. All right, so here's the thing. First off, I want to congratulate you on getting away from being a lawyer, so I just want to get that out of the way. Lawyer yes, to salsa you. Is always a great transition. I told the story, I don't know if I said it on the air or off the air, to Amy Guth, who was on before this show. And I told her, like, yeah, there's a bunch of stuff to this business, and obviously, like anything else, you know, it's about getting in stores, and it's building products, and it's, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the idea of pairing chips and salsa is brilliant and so simple and, like, ridiculous, quite honestly, that it hasn't been done. Because I think about it. How many times do I grab... I either have like my go-to cheap 7-Eleven salsa or the one that I like really like, and then you just grab whatever chips are there, and it's like, why are we not pairing the chips and the salsa should be built together? Why are we not doing that? And you have cracked the code on this.
Well, thank you. I mean, definitely, you know, we think that the tortilla chip sort of stands alone as the best way to enjoy salsa, especially enjoy it on the go, so... You know, we wanted to have control over the entire product experience rather than letting, you know, someone try our delicious salsa and then ruin it with a chip that just doesn't live up to our standards.
Oh, I told
Plus,
you.
We also wanted to have, yeah, and we wanted to have the portability of it. So currently, in the really, your option is to go buy a very large 16-ounce bag of tortilla chips and a 16-ounce jar of salsa. Not very convenient for an on-the-go snack.
No, I would say not. So, Chris, I want to get off of food for a second and talk about actual business. What do you see here? What are questions you might have about this?
So what do you think the biggest obstacles are to scale this? Because as I think about, like, you know, the grocery aisle, the store aisle, like, there's just more and more brands, you know, more and more selections and choices. How do you get that valuable shelf space? Because that seems like that's going to be really difficult.
So, yeah, that's a great question. One of the biggest obstacles is getting in front of the buyer. So if you think about the sort of natural specialty food industry, there are tens of thousands of different brands all trying to get the attention, especially in the grocery category, which is sort of, you know, canned goods, sauces, condiments, dips. You're trying to get the attention of one buyer. So the biggest sort of obstacle for me initially was, how do I get that buyer's attention? So started out by doing food trade shows, and that's, you know, how I got my first big account, Whole Foods. And since then, you know, I continue to do these trade shows, but there's sort of, I don't know if it's a necessary evil, I wouldn't call it a necessary evil, but it's a necessary part of the business. And we use brokers. So a broker, a food broker, basically represents, you know, anywhere from like 20 to 100 brands, and they're able to get the attention of the buyer. They have sort of, you know, set appointments, and then they can pitch the brand to the buyer. So that was always like the hardest part for me. And so we've hired brokers. Now we have brokerage coverage in California, Chicago, sort of like the Midwest area, Rocky Mountain, the Southeast, and soon going to be hiring a broker for the Northeast. So we've, I think we've cracked that part.
I think also when you start, you put this combo together, being the first ever, I really do think that like is a separator. Cause if I were to look and on the go, I think about tailgating obviously, but I also just think in general, like I'm going to plug a Chicago company, Farmer's Fridge. I love the guac chip combo they have because like the guac is good. I don't know what it would be like with like a Tostito. I don't know if it would be as good or not, but I know that paired with the exact type of chip that they have, which is sort of like a grain chip, it's unbelievable. And so ability for a quick bite and know that it's good. And then you'd be able to like add SKUs and really unique flavor combos. The chip companies or the salsa companies for that matter, neither one of them are really positioned well to like alter their process. So if you come in with that, there's a nice little competitive advantage, at least long enough for you to get brand recognition to where like when they start knocking you off, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. So we released this product, the Summer Fancy Food Show, and I could not believe the positive responses that we got. So just ordinarily trade shows, I kind of have to work a little hard to get buyers in to come to look at the products. But with this, they would see it. They'd instantly come talk to me. And, you know, a few people were like, listen, this product is so good, you're going to have to look over your shoulder because the big boys might be coming after you soon. But like you mentioned, I mean, it does take a long time for any of these sort of behemoth CPG companies to release a new product. They go through, you know, tons of iterations of consumer testing. So we think that we do have at least, hopefully, 6 to 9 months first mover advantage here in the space. And that should give us time to get this brand recognition. I think our packaging looks amazing, too, and that also helps. It will definitely help with the consumer to pick it up and give it a shot.
I totally agree with you. Where do people go to invest in this company?
So to invest in the company, go to republic.co/salsagod.
I love this name, by the way. I have to tell you, the Salsa God. And I'm looking at the page right now, which we're sharing on social at Technorian at Katoon. You can find it there. The packaging, you are right. This is pretty dope. I'm a huge fan. I don't know if this is like any inspiration here, but we talked about TST, speaking of which, earlier. They had an investor from the Jimmy John's guy, and I just love the brand packaging where you've got it sort of like succinctly, like you know lime, you know exactly what the flavors are based on the packaging. You don't have to like read it. You know exactly what it is and what it does. I think it makes it simpler for consumers. So I like this a lot. I want to appreciate and thank you for taking the time to come and call in, and hopefully people, you know, throw some money your way.
Thank you very much. And just, you know, an interesting flavor that we're releasing, something else that no one else has done, is we're releasing our Sriracha salsa very soon. So everyone loves Sriracha hot sauce.
Oh, no. And you said cigarettes and salsa. I was like, I'm not in on that one. But Sriracha salsa, is that what you said?
Yes.
Yes, I'm in with that. I think that's a fantastic plan. Thank you very much for shouting that out.
All righty. Thank you very much, Scott.
Of course. Take care, Danny.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Alrighty, we are going to come back and talk about that pitch after this little break. All right, Chris, you have heard the pitches. I am going to say, I'm going to give a sound bite of my feeling on this, on the company that he did, based solely on the fact that I love salsa. So,
Shang-Wei.
He gets the sound on that one. I love salsa. I think it's a tough space. I think he's going to have a hard time with the space, although if I read correctly, he's got some experience. He's in a bunch of stores. He's got Whole Foods. Doesn't necessarily mean successful, but I do think that pairing thing is legit.
There's something under the pairing, like putting it together, and yeah. I kind of wonder how that hasn't happened before.
Right?
But, you know, to your point, like salsa, I mean, it's got to be a competitive kegger. I was at the grocery store trying to buy mayonnaise, and there had to be like 50 different kinds.
Yeah.
And just trying to figure out what's the difference. I mean, like salsa's got to be even wider.
Yeah. So like where I'm stuck in this is like, I have a hard time investing in food type products, period, because of just how competitive and difficult it is. But the combo thing with salsa, I think, is almost unique in a way that like cheese and wine is. Like, think of this. Like, if I, and I'm actually a fan of the garbage, I don't know, what is it, Pace? Like, the Pace medium cilantro. Like, I like that.
There's
one,
a reason
actually.
Why it sells.
Yeah, it sells. I like it. What I like about it is that I can go to anywhere with it, with any chips, and it's fine. And there's something to be said for that, the simplicity of it. But imagine where you have the control to create baller flavors that only explode more when paired with the right chip. Like, you, all of a sudden, there's like a whole other line of things that they can do with it, which normally, you might not do a sriracha type flavored salsa because what chips you get could make it taste terrible.
No idea.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden there's like a whole other play there. That got my attention.
I'm kind of following you now with the wine and cheese pairing and then going with the chips and salsa. I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of salsa lovers out there just like you that are like, this is, you know, I've been dreaming about this. Why is it taking so long?
And here's another part, like to get kind of strategic. So like I grew up with RX Bar Peter Rahal. And
great business.
You know, fantastic business. Exited $600 million to Kellogg's. One of the things that he did was, I think, never gets talked about. Super innovative. He found a way to get himself not sitting down next to all the protein bars. And he found his way to not get sitting down necessarily right next to all of the candy bars. So he wasn't like an alt, like, kind bar. It's a small little niche that if you sell, if people take the product and like it, they will move you to the front of the aisle because it's dollars. And what if you go to Target even now, it's not in the protein random bar, which means, how I don't know, 80% of the people who go into the Target aren't going to go down that aisle. But if you're a person who goes down like the apple juice boxes and the kind healthier food but not quite protein bar aisle, you're going to see it. And so by creating a brand around a concept that's like it's a meal. It can be a protein bar meal replacement, or it can be because you just like the bar like you do kind. It's an, you know, so he packaged it just so that like the every man would walk down the aisle, and then ultimately because the sales were good, he gets moved to the front. But that, it's like he created something about the product in the product and in the branding that enabled him to create shelf space for himself where there wasn't. And that's what when I think of the salsa, that's what caught my attention. Was like, yeah, it's really cool for me and you to like have salsa combo. But what you just did is you took me away from the salsa and away from the random bags of 1,000 chips, and you put me hanging on the corner of the aisle where two are paired because they know that you're a grab and go. So if you can brand it right and people buy it, it already incentivizes the stores to put it somewhere else.
Interesting. I didn't know that RX story. I have a couple of boxes of it in my cupboard, though, so at home.
I had an RX on the way in today.
Yeah.
I had the peanut butter one. I love it. I was actually just Instagramming Peter the other day. He is enjoying his view in Miami. Things are good. Life is good. But yeah, so I got to ask you before we end. Like, how would you rate your experience today? Do you want to co-host shows? Do you want to host your own show?
I mean, I think you definitely have the radio voice, so I don't think this is...
Is that a way of saying I'm ugly? Is that, listen, my wife tells me I have a radio voice every day.
No, I really enjoyed the experience. It's fun to talk through stories and hear the entrepreneurs like Michael and Danny hearing their story of, you know, they're in the stages of building. And that's like a fun time.
Yeah.
You know, I think of those days fondly, but also like, man, that was hard.
I was just guessing.
I don't want to do that again. But, you know, it's unlike any other experience, and the sacrifices and the pain and pleasure at the same time is just kind of, it's wild. And when you build those success stories like RX Bar, it can be a lot of fun and very rewarding.
I was just going to say, we only have like a minute and a half and change left here, but I there's something about that entrepreneur PTSD thing that like I get every time I hear the story. It's like, oh man, like, and does that make me does that mean that there's different kinds of entrepreneurs? Like, I was speaking of Peter. Now, granted, he had huge success. He wants to get back in and do something else, not just this minute. He's going to enjoy it a little bit, but like he wants to get right back into something else. He went through hell to get here. And now, granted, had a great outcome, so maybe that makes you want to do it again because you think you can or you know you can. But like, there are parts of the beating that I took and take trying to keep this thing rolling that like I don't know if I have like the stomach for it.
The best analogy I have, or at least I always hear people compare it to, is like having kids. You know that
Dealing with that right now too. My wife is the one that had it, but I am like, this is crazy.
And the first 6 months, you're sleepless, but man, by the time they're 2 years old, you forget all about that. They're talking, they're walking around, they're a lot of fun and have a personality, and you're like, hey, this wouldn't be so bad. It doesn't matter that I didn't sleep for 6 months.
You say that. Everyone says this to me, and I'm thinking, are you crazy? Like, I don't know. No, but you're totally right. I just think that this. The entrepreneur thing, I guess what I enjoy about this show is having the companies call in and they're like, it's their problem. Like, we can just sit there and be like, oh, yeah, that's sounds like a great idea. But, you know, that's future you problems. I don't know.
Well, I guess the takeaway should be I'm going to go to the Whole Foods and see if I can get a chips and salsa combo box.
Did he say, is it local Chicago salsa here? Or is he's in a bunch of Whole Foods or all of them. I don't know. I definitely am going to check it out. We had a company call, was it Blendtopia call in? And they are at Whole Foods, and it was basically like the packages of pre-made blend, like the fruit, everything's frozen, the seeds, the whatever you want in it, and you just dump it in your bullet, and you're good, and it's awesome. They're at Whole Foods. I actually tried them out. So some of the food companies have come on here, have been fairly successful. I'm in. Wrap it up? All right. Well, at this point, I want to say thank you so much for taking the time and coming in and joining us. Where do people go and where do companies go to either follow you or to catch up and follow and work with Review Trackers?
Scott, thanks so much for having me on. So Review Trackers, you can find us on the web. If you got a business that's looking to track reviews, reviewtrackers.com. We're also hiring. We have dozens of open roles. Check it out, reviewtrackers.com/careers. And just because I know my mom's listening, hi, Mom.
That was very nice. My mom is listening as well. Hi, Mom. All right. If you want to check out our podcast or anything else, go to technori.com. Follow us on social at technori. You can follow me at Katoon. That's a wrap.